says, man, than the popcorn popper.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal.
Mr. Kraft, a couple years...
Sweetheart, you gotta call me RKK.
Okay.
.985 The Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich, and...
Here's the deal.
Here's the deal. We're on NBCSN. Simulcast on the TV side of things. We are in the Town Fair Tire Studios, and once again, Adam Jones is with us this morning, and someone else who might be with us this morning, or is going to be on with us this morning, we just don't know what time, would be Ray Allen.
Yes.
After all of these weeks of trying to get him on for promoting his book, he will be on the show at some point during the show. I've been told that... Anytime. I mean, it could be right now. It could be in the 9 o'clock hour.
6:05.
It could be.
Nowhere, Boston.
He is going to call us and come on to promote not only his book that he has coming out, but also his appearance tonight at the Wilbur Theater. I've learned very little still about what the format is going to be tonight. I do know, however, that if you go, I guess you get a copy of his book. I don't know if it's signed, but like that's part of the deal. And I read that actually in the Boston Globe this morning. So you get a copy of his book if you go to this thing that he's doing at the Wilbur. I'm assuming he's going to be, you know, answering questions. Once again, I don't know about that, but I do know that I have a lot of questions, and I have for years with Ray Allen. Ray Allen, I'm fascinated by him and how everything went down with how he left the Boston Celtics and how he went from being so beloved in this town. Like, I mean, I loved Ray Allen. I don't think there's anyone who... He was a tough guy to hate. The way that you heard about his work ethic, like if he missed a free throw in an important game, you heard all of these stories, you know, that almost turned into legend. But most of them were true, and they've been confirmed by a lot of people who write for the team. He would stay at the gym or stay at the TD Garden for hours just practicing free throws until he felt... All right, I've got these demons out of me. I'm not going to miss another one in a clutch situation again. And he rarely did. But there were a couple times where in a big game, he would miss a free throw and it would be completely uncharacteristic. And almost every morning, you would hear the same story come out. Like, he stayed at the TD Garden until 1 a.m. trying to hit a free throw just over and over and over again because he was maniacal that way. So that was that. That's the kind of like blue collar thing that made people love Ray Allen. And then the way he left... He just crapped on all of that. Like, he did everything wrong that you could do to make people not like you. He went to the rivals for less money. He was very petty in the press. This whole thing with Rondo that's going on right now. Rondo's been great, by the way. Everything that's been going on has made me like Rondo even more because Rondo, like, is not keeping his mouth shut. I think he said about Ray Allen, he said that, well, Ray obviously can't sell a book without mentioning my name. I mean, if he needed some money, he could have come to me for a loan. Like, where was this Rondo years ago? Like, you were kind of quiet. You wouldn't talk to the press that much. I know behind the scenes, apparently, you were all fired up. But I'm looking forward to it. So Ray Allen finally will be on the show at some point today. If anybody has any questions, because, I mean, this is, once again, a very polarizing player, and I obviously have a bunch of ones that I want to ask, but if there's any questions that you want asked, 617-779-0985. Also, you can tweet us at Toucher and Rich. As I said, this is one of those mornings where at any given moment he could call us. So we could get a phone call in just a second, or we could get it during, you know, some bit we're doing. It doesn't matter. We're going to cut in and talk to him. So
the obvious thing, you know, we'll talk about, you know, the pettiness of leaving.
Sure.
You know, being a traitor, all that good stuff.
He doesn't think he was a traitor, by the way, and of course he would say that. But, I mean, his justification was strange, if you've read any excerpts. I want to read the book, and I'm going to have to tell him I haven't read it. I don't think it's out yet. It comes out, Friday or something?
I've seen some of the excerpts as well. I mean, without, you know, digging too deep into it, I mean, it's basically he's saying, well, I wanted to win. I mean, it's basically that. Hey, I left money on the table to go chase a ring, or maybe not chase a ring. I'm sure he wouldn't phrase it that way. But,
I
prioritized winning, and I left money on the table. How can you view me as a traitor? Blah, blah, blah. I know he said stuff like that in the past.
In the book, though, it was different. It was that, and I'm going to have to look up the actual quote, and I'm paraphrasing. The way it seemed like he was justifying is that what the Celtics were offering him was less than his worth at that position. So on principle, he didn't want to take the money. But then I want to say, well, then why did you go to a place that paid you less?
I just double-checked all this. Wow. So he got offered 2 years, $12 million from the Celtics, and he took a three-year deal on the mid-level exception in Miami, which
for
is
like $2 million.
Yeah, I think it was like $3 million and change, but definitely less. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he took essentially half the money to... And I know that there was the whole Avery Bradley thing going on where, you know, he was basically moved to the bench.
Yeah.
And he was going to be more than likely a bench player. And to that I say, you're on the bench in Miami.
Correct.
So I don't understand why. Well, his justification is strange. Now, I know why he did it. He's obviously angry. I mean, he's angry. Yeah, he's butthurt.
The Celtics tried to trade him.
Sure.
Avery Bradley passed him by.
Yeah.
He doesn't like Rajon Rondo.
Of course.
So, right. I mean, just say those, Ray. You know, you don't have to hide behind all these other. Just say those.
Sure.
We're human beings. We understand that.
Yep.
But I don't get why he just wouldn't say that.
It's interesting. He did some press yesterday, and that's how I knew that maybe we'd get him today. I mean, he did an interview with Barstool Sports. He did a 9-minute interview with Portnoy. Originally, it was supposed to be the pizza test, but the 9-minute interview, 6 of it was basketball, 3 of it was pizza. And I know he did J.J. Redick's podcast yesterday as well. I've not had a chance to hear it. And Dave Portnoy asked him about why did you leave for less money? And Allen's justification, at least to Portnoy yesterday, was, you know, the money he was being offered by the Celtics wasn't kind of commensurate with the money he was previously making. He felt like he was disrespected.
So in other words, if I'm going to take a pay cut from anyone, I'll take it from
a different place.
Not from the place I've been playing and I won a championship and
Allen's,
I've been an all-star.
Right. Exactly. Allen's justification was, okay, I'll take a pay cut, but I'm going to go, I have a chance to win a championship here. You guys have signed, this is what Allen said to Portnoy, you guys have signed everyone else, then you come to me and give me the crumbs that are left over. So that is his justification for it.
Those crumbs were the best money you were getting off.
I know. I understand
that's like the definition
compared
of petty.
Compared to the money he was making before, his justification was, okay, you know, you're offering me crumbs compared to what I was making before and compared to everybody else.
Well, I mean, obviously he did enough research to figure out the kind of money that was being offered out there. And that he was going to be getting more with the Celtics than anyone else. I'm telling you, he's just done everything wrong PR wise, and I want to ask him about some of the things he did. I mean, obviously the banner ceremony was very strange. How he handled all of that. I mean, there's a lot of questions, but none more important than this one. Chris, you're on Toucher and Rich.
Good morning.
What's up?
Nothing much. I was just curious if you still have the knockers to ask Ray about the catfishing thing.
Oh, you bet. I mean, I have to ask about it. It's one of the strangest stories that's gone on forever. Yeah,
you'd have the balls to ask him about catfishing.
That's not a balls question. That's a question that was in the news everywhere.
You don't have the stones.
That's right.
Shirt and leave. You got nothing.
Well, listen, I'm not like, you know, Mr. Shaqy in the face, but that's like something that's been, I mean, that's a big story. It was a news story that he had to comment on. And I'm fascinated by it. How'd you get catfished by a dude? What's going on here? There's a lot of weirdness there as well.
Why didn't you go on the show Catfish? You've been catfished. Yeah. Why didn't you just have the real professional sort it out for you?
The whole thing is weird. Like that whole part of, and we'll get into the details of that. If you don't know what went on, there was just some mysterious guy. Okay, we'll save it. We'll get into that in a little bit. But that will definitely be something that was asked. Yeah, I want to know about the catfishing, about the guy who tricked you into... You know, he says that he had like an online relationship with you, you know, maybe even more, but I want to find out what happened there because the way it ended was strange. There were lawsuits and all that stuff, but we all talked about that as well. And so, yeah, we don't know what time he's going to call, but he's going to call. And when it happens, we're going to have to cut off Kevin Paul DuPont or whoever we're talking to. I know Hurley's going to get here in studio. Michael Hurley's going to be in at 9 o'clock. As soon as he gets in,
he'll like sit down. Yeah. Sit down, get his headphones on, get the first question ready for him. And we're like, Hurley, sorry.
Battles traffic all the way in, you know, throws things in his car.
Every time Hurley's in studio, something comes up.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah. He ends up like sitting through a break while something's going on. Like almost every single time. It's like, hey, Hurley, can you come in? And he ends up sitting there and just kind of being a pleasant passenger during a bit and or a break. And, you know, and then we end up talking to him for 2 minutes. And hey, thanks for coming in.
All right. Thanks, Hurley.
So Hurley will be in this morning. He wrote actually a really good piece about Tuukka Rask and what he believes, and actually the stats kind of back it up, but the misperception that that Tuukka Rask chokes at playoff time. And the numbers are pretty, I don't want to say shocking, But it does paint a pretty good picture. That
they're definitely maybe, better than I expected.
Yeah, that maybe we're flipping out a little too much. And maybe it's because we have a bad taste in our mouth because of several of the big plays that he gave up. And we all remember 2013. And that's the biggest punch in the gut was what happened against the Blackhawks in Game 6. That was bang, bang, over with. Now, I don't know if everyone immediately blames Tuukka Rask for that. But, you know, Tuukka Rask is obviously...
He was part of the collapse.
So we'll get to that and a whole bunch more stuff around 9 o'clock. Also, speaking of your Boston Bruins, infuriating. Just infuriating television last night. And what was one of the more exciting games. I mean, Winnipeg, that's a fun team to watch.
A good team.
They are a good team. Yeah. They're fast. They play physical.
The fans were into it. That was a fun building.
That's a tough building to play in.
Oh, yeah.
The Bruins came right back. It was impressive.
I don't find the Lightning games... horribly exciting. I mean, it's great because obviously they're the guys in the East that you're jockeying with. That Winnipeg game, I mean, if you had, for some reason, if they went to the finals, it would suck because it's not a fun city to visit. So I wouldn't want to obviously to be Nashville or Las Vegas. That being said, that would be one hell of a seven-game series.
Right. The hockey would be good against Nashville. Maybe it'd be so-so against Vegas. It'd definitely be good against Winnipeg.
Be great against Winnipeg.
On last night.
Oh, yeah. That was a fun game to watch, except for the part that was infuriating, which we will get to. Also, all sorts of weird things that happened with the NFL yesterday. Rules being passed. Not only the catch stuff, but there's a lot of pettiness. And Gruden being Gruden. We'll get into all of that.
Toucher.
Is this what you want?
And Rich.
Are you happy now?
Toucher and Rich.
Sick.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Be happy what you missed. It's Toucher and Rich.
.5 is Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. And the Bruins get absolutely hosed by the refs in Winnipeg last night.
Here's Lowry. Weaves his way in the high slot. It's fired. Hit the side of the net. Hudobin scrambles over the far post. They score. And now it's waved off. Does Hudobin have it? The light went on. The horn sounded here. But the referee along the near side washed it out.
Tanev is pretty certain that this puck went in the net. The linesman's looking for the puck in the net. Anton Hudobin says, it's in my glove. Here it is. Now, was the glove inside the net?
The call on the ice has been overturned. We have a goal.
Okay, so the Bruins rally that resulted in a shootout loss in 1 point should have notched them, too, as the Bees get completely jobbed by the refs in Winnipeg. 5-4, the final score. With about 5 minutes left in the first, it was... unbelievable. So, okay, so was it Brandon? It was Brandon Tanev yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, who had the hat trick. He eventually he hits one towards Hudobin in the right post, and in the scramble, Hudobin comes up with it in his glove, as you heard right there. So while the ref closest to the scene whistles the play dead, he gives them, there's no goal sign. He whistles the play dead at that point.
He didn't wash it out. He just put his hands up instead of out.
He put his hands up, all right? So video replay after an agonizing 3 minutes. I think they went through an entire song on the PA.
It seemed like five.
The only reason
seven
I know that is
nine.
What was the song that got him a country boy that I think they played the entire
that
song?
Was
John
Denver, a classic.
I think it was Jake got him a country boy. They were playing over the PA, and they did the entire thing. And they keep showing, and you can't see anything.
No.
There's no angle. There's no camera.
Nothing even close to conclusive.
Not even close. And after that entire song played, the refs in Winnipeg hilariously called it a goal. Now, apparently one of the linesmen, I'm assuming from the blue line, called it a goal once the refs got together. He goes, no, I think it was a goal. And then the NHL released a statement afterwards saying that the referee informed the Situation Room that Brandon Tanev's shot completely crossed the Boston goal line and the video replays were inconclusive. Just as botched a call as I have seen all season in a season full of botched calls. But it was nice to see the Bruins just a few minutes after that at least make it a little more exciting with this filthy shot from this guy.
They were repositioning the helmet, a backhand, they score! Got free in the slot and roofs a backhand over Connor Hellebuck's glove. And the Boston Bruins have tied the game here in Winnipeg at one.
Yeah, Ryan Donato, a damn wizard. He kept things interesting for a while. However, the Bruins had to play catch-up the entire game after being down 3-1 shortly after that. And, of course, they rallied to tie things up because that's what they do. They're like Chucky from the Child's Play movies. They never die. It's Mike Myers. When Jamie Lee Curtis is sitting there, thinks it's all over with, you just see him sit up, and they just continue, and they are relentless. So for a brief moment there, we almost thought that Brad Marchand might do it again in overtime.
Poke check. Marchand might have a break. 5 seconds left. Four. Marchand down to the slot. Walks in. Shoots. Hellebuck the save with 1 second left. And this game's gone to the shootout. Oh, he had the game on his stick.
Oh, it was right there.
He was
seconds left in overtime.
Dog tired. He was moving in slow motion as he crossed the blue line.
That was the biggest shock of the whole game last night.
Yeah, that he didn't score.
I mean, we talked about this the other day. You know, it's like, oh, Marchand got another overtime winner. Ho-hum.
Yeah.
Like, fully, who didn't see that coming? Who didn't expect it? I'm shocked. I mean, I know he's tired. I know that he's done it a million times this season. I was shocked.
Yeah, yeah. But that was, I mean, when he did that, I mean, it was everyone with the whole
place. Game, oh, here it comes!
And how dramatic. With like 1 second left, he's going to bury this one. And it didn't happen. So the Bruins end up losing it in a shootout. Here's Anton Hudobin on the phantom goal that wasn't.
Wasn't. I'm pretty sure that wasn't in because my eyes was there and my glove was there. So I was pretty sure that I saved it. But there's, I don't know, so maybe better, I don't know. That's my opinion.
I think they got screwed again. It seemed like there should have been an icing call. There was a puck that was released near the red line, and it appeared that one of the linesmen had his hand up for icing. Somehow it was not called. It went around the boards.
Okay.
And then Winnipeg scored again, and that's what made it 3-1. If I remember correctly.
So here would be my thing. Like, I agree, especially the first goal. Like, especially the first goal, how is a linesman calling it from, as Jack Edwards said, I don't know, over under 100 times last night from 76 feet away or whatever. Yeah. So I agree. That's very iffy. You want to throw the icing on top of it? Fine. It's interesting to me to look back at that game. I mean, Winnipeg wasn't exactly helped by the officials late in that game either. The Bruins have 3 power play goals. You know, one is on a 5-minute boarding major. Fair.
Well
fine.
Deserved. Yes,
well deserved. How about the other? You want to talk about an iffy bang bang call that I think washes out the icing. Did Heinen keep that puck on side?
Clearly.
You think clearly?
Clearly.
I don't know about clearly.
I didn't see any.
I think it's just as bang bang as the icing.
If you can't overturn that goal call, you're not going to be able to overturn that whether it was outside the line
call. I just think the Bruins ended up getting, I think, a potential gift, just like the Bruins got it.
5-3 because of the blown challenge as well.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So that leads directly to another power play. That's how Winnipeg gets a goal. It's like, okay, the first goal didn't work out so hot for the Bruins. They came back, they tied it at 3-3. They came back, they tied it at 4-4. They had other chances to win, in other words.
I don't bitch about the reffing that much. And as far as what you're talking about, those calls, those things happen in hockey games and it sucks. But that goal that wasn't...
No, that
was atrocious.
Well,
the fact that it was a linesman, A, that
correct.
Called it, is ridiculous. And second of all, that the play was called dead by the ref who was right there looking at the goal, and then... The explanation that because the linesman called it a goal, there was no conclusive evidence to overturn that is absolutely ridiculous.
Once it goes to video review, I understand. They have to go with the call on the ice. I get that. The fact that a linesman overruled it, yes, not ideal, not a good call, questionable. The rest of it, I'm with you. I feel like that's more run-of-the-mill stuff. And even so, the Bruins overcame it.
Yeah.
Like, the Bruins overcame it. They were 3-3. They were 4-4. They go to a shootout. They still have a chance to win.
Yeah, and they still didn't have Zdeno Chara, Charlie McAvoy, Rick Nash, David Backes, Jake DeBrusk. I mean, that's
they
impressive.
Lose Grizzlick late last night.
Well, okay, so let's talk about that, because that's the one thing that, this one point that they got might have come with a pretty big price. So Jets defenseman Josh Morrissey ran Matt Grizzlick from behind into the corner, sending him out of the game, and it was not pretty.
Scheifele barrels his way in over the line, far side, drops the shoulder on Grizzly, hit by Marchand, he got flattened in the far corner, and he is down and in pain.
Remember the hit by Scheifele on Pastrnak?
And then Grizzly just got crushed in the right corner, and look out, the tempers are flaring now. Back of the net, you have Kevin Miller in the thick of it, and Grizzly is down in the right corner. As this game all of a sudden came unglued.
Yeah, Morrissey ended up getting that 5-minute major, and we'll almost certainly get a call from the league. The only thing we got as far as an update with him was Cassidy afterwards said it's an upper body injury, and he'll be re-examined when the team gets back home today. So that sucks, because Grizzlick had worked his way into the top four. I mean, the guy has been pretty damn good since he's been there. It's going to be a decent loss if he's out long term.
Right.
Who knows how bad it is, because once again, everything is so secretive in the NHL. But hopefully today you're going to learn a little bit when he finally gets examined once he's in town.
You never know, but it, it didn't look like him getting up didn't look great, you know? So I like I said, you never know. It's hard to read into that sort of thing, but the early returns on that didn't look promising.
Well, so that leaves the Bruins only 1 point behind Tampa in the East with a game in hand, which makes tomorrow's night's game at home absolutely enormous. The Bruins take on the Lightning for first place in the biggest home game of the regular season. I don't think I'm speaking hyperbole there. I expect Nick will be out doing recaps amongst his people, maybe Bird as well.
We're double teaming this one.
Wow. You might have to.
Wow.
It's that big. Listen,
it is a big game.
It's a huge game. It's for first place, and it's against the Lightning. And the weird thing about all this is that they play the Lightning one more time next week. I think it's on Tuesday, but this time in Tampa. But this is... It's going to be fun, man. I'm telling you, I don't find those games as exciting as that Winnipeg game. That Winnipeg team is fun as hell to watch. But either way, how about that? The Bruins might end up being first in the East. The way that they've just continued to creep up. We'll see what they can. I got to take this. I can't take calls in here, by the way. Can you pot him up? Mark, what's going on?
Hey, what's up? It's Mr. 3000 here, guys.
No, you're Mr. 3045. I'm looking at how many times, Mark, you have called our show. I'm looking at our screen.
You know,
3045 times.
Rich, you know what it is? It's every time the line is busy, it counts as a call.
Well, that's still 3,045 times.
In. It doesn't matter. You're still called in.
I'm in a vehicle all day long, and all I do is listen to all you guys.
Well, God bless your loyalty. I'm never going to knock you for being loyal. But let's hear it. With 3,045 calls under your belt, I know you're going to have a great. This is going to be the best call of the
Scorcher.
Day. Let's hear it.
Explain to me how a few weeks ago Backes gets a match penalty for his hit. The guy gets right back up. Later on in that game, he comes back and he scores, okay? That guy last night left his seat, almost put Grizzly through the glass, okay? It's a five-minute major penalty. That's it.
He's going to get a suspension.
He'll be
suspended today. Now, as far as a match penalty, now that I don't know because he did leave his feet.
Yeah, I mean they're so look, it's inconsistent, but they're different officials,
right?
You know, they're different officials. They're different human beings. They made a different call.
But don't get it twisted, Mark. He's going to get suspended. I mean he's going to get a call today. I think that might be his second one this year. Hasn't he gotten? I have to check on that. But I think that he's been in trouble for this earlier this season, and I don't know what kind of suspensions resulted in it, but he's don't worry, he's getting suspended for that hit.
He'll get his comeuppance.
Yeah, so either way, you got tomorrow night a big one, and you can hear it right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Okay, the NFL can't get out of their own way. It's not the catch rule now. It's another one that has a lot of ex-players going nuts yesterday on Twitter. Apparently you can't tackle anyone anymore. Like, it's like impossible to tackle anyone anymore if you follow by the letter of the rule what the NFL threw out there yesterday. And it is garbage. We'll talk about that in just a moment right after John Wallach's headlines.
Stay tuned for Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
98.5 Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich. And, it's funny, Adam, when we had Burt Breer on last week, I asked him about the report that 13 different scouts had gone to go check out Johnny Manziel throw, and his whole thing was everybody needs to calm down because his agent was very crafty, and what happened was he was throwing it. Was it USD's
program? University of San Diego, yeah.
Okay, so they needed an arm just to show off their guys, so Johnny Manziel's agent said, well, this is a great way to get my guy in front of a bunch of people, but they're not specifically there to see Johnny Manziel. So they sent him out there. He ended up throwing to these guys. And the way it was reported was that 13 scouts were present to see Johnny Manziel throwing. And it makes it all about Johnny Manziel. And Bert said, don't read anything into it. Even the fact that the Patriots weighed, I guess, Johnny Manziel, that don't worry about that. These guys who are scouts for the Patriots are sweating bullets because Bill Belichick is very strict and he's thorough and he wants answers for everything. So these guys went above and beyond by even weighing the guy who was throwing, whether it be Johnny Manziel or anyone else. And so they're like, okay, fine. And you kind of write that off. And then there's the story that came out the day before yesterday that Johnny Manziel was going to be throwing at Texas Tech's big pro day. Texas A&M's pro day. And that there were going to be scouts from all of the major teams. Everyone was going to be there. And once again, you go, oh, this is just another thing that Bert's talking about. They somehow were able to get an arm out there. And then you hear Karen Garigian yesterday in the Herald say this. Apparently, not only were the Patriots there, but the Patriots spoke with Johnny Manziel both before the workout and after the workout for an extended period of time. Does that mean anything to you? Is that just kind of him just being nice and passing the time? Or is this something that Bill Belichick, once again, is going to try to prove to everyone that he's the smartest man in the room?
Well, again, I would say, I mean, it certainly could be nothing, you know, but now you have, I would say, you know, mounting evidence that there's some interest from the Patriots. Like, I'm not telling you they're going to sign him, but they were at the pro day at USD. And again, you could write that off, as you just said. There's a draftable tight end there, I think, that maybe the Patriots were checking out, among other teams, or at least keeping tabs on. He went to A&M. He's throwing to Christian Kirk, who might be a first-round pick.
Right.
Maybe the Patriots are checking out Kirk, and their scout or whoever there was in attendance just decided to chat up Johnny Manziel before and after the workout.
Yeah.
I would just say it certainly could be nothing. But the more evidence there is, the more probable it seems they're at bare minimum keeping tabs and have some interest on Manziel.
There's definitely interest there. And this would be a classic Bill Belichick move. I mean, they had a chance to meet with him at the University of San Diego Pro Day, get all the answers they needed to. They could have talked to him while they were weighing him. There are a lot of things they could have done. But the fact that they went out of their way to meet with him before and after, this is a follow-up. They I don't know if they like what they saw. There's such a thing as being thorough, but I think you could have had all your questions answered down on the West Coast. I think there is certainly fire in this smoke.
You remember the Adrian Peterson stuff last year when he came for a visit? And we're all like, why is he visiting? Why would they bring him in? And there was a theory out there that maybe it's a favor to an agent. And I need to double check who this is all just popping into my head. I need to double check who Peterson's agent is. I don't know who Manziel is represented by. But if the Patriots are interested, that means all of a sudden, oh, every other team now has to take note and do their... I mean, is it possible they're doing a favor for an agent?
I'd have to check and see who the agent is.
Just to stoke up interest?
I don't know. We'll see. All I know is that there's reports now coming out that he looked really good. And, you know, we don't... When things like this leak out, you don't know who it's coming from. Is it leaked out through his people? And but I guess the people on hand said that Johnny Manziel's throwing it better than he did even before he went on his drug and whatever binge that he was on for the last 2 years.
I'm sure you guys talked about this. I don't know your end. Do you want him? Would you want him here?
For the radio's sake? Absolutely.
We all
for content's sake?
Want him here for content. But would you want him on the team? Like, is he worth a flyer?
No, absolutely not. He's a mess. He was a mess. But what have we learned that proves to us that he won't go back to being that guy? I mean, you know, what's the guy? He said all the right things, by the way, before the draft. You remember that? He was like a good soldier, and you know, I'm gonna. You're all right.
He did his pro day with a helmet, and shoulder pads, and like, you know, he was. Oh, he's out there and he's taking it seriously. And
someone gave him all the talking points, and then what happens? He turns into a massive jackass. You heard all the stories about him. You know, when he was in Cleveland and the stupid money sign crap. It's like, you know, he hasn't done anything yet to prove to me that if he gets into the NFL once again, he'll be able to sustain that lifestyle.
So my issue with him, you know, if he were just a partier, you know, I'd probably say, hey, you know what, maybe he's worth the flyer. Former first round talent, you know, whether he deserved to go there or not, I guess is debatable. But sure, take a flyer on him. He's not just a partier. Like, if you go back and look at some of the allegations from his ex-girlfriend, Colleen Crowley.
Yeah,
like,
he's an abuser.
Yeah. So that to me is where I would say I'm out on Johnny Manziel. Like, do I like the idea of a reclamation project? Do I like the idea of a kid who I enjoyed watching a lot in college and really liked in college?
Oh, sure. He was fun as hell.
Sure. But if I'm the Patriots and I'm the Crafts, that would be where I draw the line. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve more work. If someone else wants to give it to him, fine. But there's 31 other teams. I don't think this team needs to be the one to bring in Manziel when he's been accused of some of the things he's been accused of.
Well, here's another example of saying all the right things.
All I can do is really just block it off. And if something pops up, it pops up. And if not, you know, and I don't get the opportunity to go back, I'm gonna go play in the CFL. And things are going to be fine. And one way or another, one day down the line, I'll get back to exactly where I want to be because I'm not going to stop until I do.
Yeah, right. You're going to love that CFL.
Yeah.
The ringing endorsement there.
He sounds gassed up about going to the CFL, playing for the Hamilton Ticats or whoever has his rights.
How many like ex-NFL players have gone to the CFL and actually stayed for an entire year? Because you always hear about them going, yeah, I'm going to go to the CFL and I'm going to get my stock back up. And they go for like a month or two. Like, okay, well,
Doug Flutie.
I'm done. other than, of course, the great Doug Flutie.
Flutie.
I'm never going to question the character of Doug
there
Flutie.
There it is.
There you go.
A lot of gray cups for him.
Right. All right, we'll get to this strange rule that was passed yesterday amongst some of the other ones in the NFL right after this. Tutcher and Rich. 98.5 of Sports Hub, it's Tutcher and Rich. And the NFL continues to try to right wrongs, and they end up wronging most rights when they're done trying to hammer things out as far as the wording of rules. This has been strange over the last week. We've been hearing a lot about the catch rule and how that has been tried to be cleaned up because there's been so many controversial plays to the point where you heard even the play-by-play guys and the color guys just frustrated. Like, I don't know anymore. Like, that became a sport amongst itself, is going on Twitter and people saying, it's a catch. No, it's not a catch. Here's why it's a catch. Here's why it's not a catch.
The Super Bowl. Collinsworth just hemming and hawing and just getting it wrong. He's like, well, I'm not even going to guess because I don't know anymore. Then he guessed and got it wrong. It's like, even in the biggest centerpiece moment in the Super Bowl, he still didn't know.
So, best part is Al Michaels getting pissed during the season. You know, so, all right, guys, can we speed this up? You know, like the most famous play-by-play broadcaster of all time has had it with the league.
He's got action on the game. He needs to know how it finishes. Right. Like, stop wasting his time.
And even most annoying would be Tony Romo and his. It's funny. I liked Tony Romo until Fred pointed that out, because at the end of the season, he had done it like once or twice before that, and I'd heard it. And maybe it's just that we got so much Tony Romo as people who watch as Patriots fans.
Right.
You got him all the time.
Catches your ear.
But man, at the end of the season. Yeah, that drove me insane.
Stop it, both of you.
It's bad. Jesus. It's bad. But the catch rule now, it's going to eliminate the requirement to maintain control of the ball throughout the process of going to the ground. Okay, that's fine. Instead, it will define a catch with a simpler three-step process. A receiver must control the ball, establish himself in bounds, and then perform a football move, such as taking a third step or lunging with the ball in hand. And they went through all of the different plays that would have been touchdowns, that weren't touchdowns. The Jesse James one I still don't agree with, because I don't think there was even a football move there. He just took it and fell, and it hit the ground.
It's a touchdown, Rich.
Well, that means that you can basically, if a ball is being thrown, then you can guide it to the ground and it be a touchdown.
If
as
you
long
have
as it's
control
over,
of the football when you cross the plane of the goal
that's
line,
not control.
It's a touchdown.
If it hits the ground, it's not control.
It wasn't. It's a touchdown.
But now they're obviously going to call it that way. It still leaves a ton of subjectivity that's going to make you people. It's not going to change much. But I do know this, is that
it's going to change maybe the result of some touchdowns, but we're all still going to be super confused.
Right.
Because there's all kinds of leeway in that rule for the officials to say, oh, well, you know, he could have made a football move there, or he could. There's too much gray.
Doesn't it invite more replay?
It sounds that way.
Yeah. So
I saw Blandino say yesterday, the former VP of officiating, that this rule was made for replay, not for on the field.
Well,
so
that's
basically
good to know.
On the field, and he was critical of it, by the way.
Yeah.
But you know, on the field, they're going to screw up all these calls, and then they'll just end up getting them right on replay, which, to answer your question, yeah, we're going to get more replay.
So there you go. That's exactly. They figured it out with the NFL. They know what ails the product. So on NFL Live yesterday on ESPN, Al Riveron was on, and he was telling Chris Mortensen that the Corey Clement and the Zach Ertz catches in the Super Bowl were ruled, quote, differently than they were during the regular season. You don't say. We said the exact same thing. We were like, all right, so I think most people would believe that in the spirit that was a catch, but that wasn't a catch 2 weeks ago when there were plays exactly like that. But then again, I don't think Patriot fans were too butthurt about that. We're too busy worrying about why the hell Malcolm Butler wasn't in the game.
I don't know about your Twitter timeline, but mine was going nuts yesterday for this admission,
I think the two things that were pissing people off most at the Super Bowl, like after the Super Bowl, was, I mean, by far and away, it was like 98% the Malcolm Butler thing.
Oh, yeah,
it should
for
be.
Sure, for sure.
But then there was the penalty on that wasn't on Chris Hogan during the final pass.
Oh, for the Hail Mary.
For the Hail Mary pass, where he just got decked. And people were saying that obviously should have been called, blah, 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 blah. But as far as that was concerned, I think most Patriots fans were like, all right, in the spirit of the rule, it's probably a touchdown, but it wasn't called that way for the longest time, especially that Ertz catch.
Yeah, and I mean, if the officials knew before the game that this is how they're going to call it, even if they had...
Oh, yeah, there was no consistency.
So it was inconsistent from prior or games prior, but if you made the decision in the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, here's how we're going to, on the biggest stage, here's how we're going to officiate it, it is a level playing field. You know, so I don't know. I thought the Ertz one was definitely a touchdown. I did not think the Clement one was a touchdown.
Okay. Well, I mean, but I do believe that those were called differently than they were.
Yeah, 100%. Earlier, especially the Clement one, was called differently than earlier in the season. 100%.
And to use the Super Bowl as the game that you're going to figure out you're going to call it a different way was strange.
No, but, it's weird.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I agree with it, just it is still a level playing field. It's not like they were like, oh, this is an Eagles touchdown, let's give it to them.
Yeah, but you want to talk about subjectivity, and now where this is going to make it, this rule right here is going to make everything a mess this season. It was also ruled by the competition committee yesterday. They said that it is a foul if a player lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. The player may be disqualified. It applies to any player anywhere on the field, and the player may be disqualified if that happens. Okay. I understand that with the Shazier situation, everything, I know that they're looking at things like that and trying to figure out how to make helmet-to-helmet hits go away, but the way it's worded, by definition, doesn't that make almost every tackle illegal?
Just about.
You always
just about
lead with your head, and you try to make contact with your shoulders first, obviously, but at the speed of the game, there's a lot of head collisions that are completely unavoidable.
If your head is up, it's not a penalty. Correct? It's just if you put your head down. If you lower the head, it's a penalty.
Or lead with.
So does that mean that running backs can't lead with the crown of their helmet when they chuck someone?
Even on a block, like a fullback pulls out to make a block.
Okay.
Whatever fullbacks are left in the NFL. But fullback pulls out to make a block, he lowers his head. That's a penalty on the offensive team.
Derek Carr tweeted yesterday, so what about quarterback sneaks? I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah.
Think about that. Yeah, I mean, a quarterback sneak, you know, by definition, you're lowering your head and you're going in. And I saw Rob Ninkovich yesterday on Twitter. Rob Ninkovich and Matt Chatham, two guys obviously who know a little bit about this, spent their time bitching about it because they're absolutely right. Ninkovich says stopping the run just got easier if a running back can't ram into someone with his head down. How about fullback power blocks or flash blocks? Nope, you're right. Absolutely gone. And Matt Chatham says, to repeat for the 10,000th time, when a human wearing a helmet bends in an athletic position of any kind and leads forward in any way, his helmeted head is first. You can't write an NFL rule that makes human physiology illegal, you unrepentant fools. God save football, yeesh. So he was obviously pissed about it as well.
God save football.
But honestly, Adam Schefter tweeted. He says, I got a text from a former NFL linebacker. I can't believe how ridiculous this lowering of the head thing is. Go back and watch any game and you'll see probably 30 to 50 examples of guys lowering their head on contact. It's an effing mess. Why does the NFL want to self-destruct?
So I think, and I've seen this parallel drawn before too, I guess I'd have to read the college rule, compare it to this, but I think it's similar to targeting in college. And I don't think they have that for offense. I think they just have that for defensive players.
Just for defense, right.
So the NFL may be taking it a step further. And targeting is legitimately the worst thing about college football right now. Mm-hmm. I love college football. I think it's superior to the NFL in a lot of ways. It's the worst thing about college football. Guys are constantly getting thrown out.
Sure.
They're reviewing these hits all the time. Mm-hmm. And I get it. It's in the name of player safety, but it's just such a bang-bang play, and it happens so many times, and it's so inconsistent. Everyone's going to be confused about it. It's a mess in college football, and the NFL being the NFL, it'll be even worse, I'm sure.
I have to hope that this is kind of like what the NHL and the NBA have tried. Remember the NBA, there was an emphasis one preseason on protecting officials, and if you said two words to any official, you got teed up.
Sure.
That happened during one preseason.
They called it once or twice.
There were technical fouls everywhere during the preseason, and we sat here wondering, is it going to be like this during the regular season? And it wasn't. And the NHL, they had this face-off rule, the delay of game face-off rule, that if two guys got tossed out of the face-off circle, it was a delay of game. I'm not saying it's exactly like this, Jones.
I was gonna say, you don't change the rule for that. You do your point of emphasis for that.
Sure. No, but I understand that. But maybe it's the NFL. This is a warning shot.
Like you're going to get two calls of this season when someone gets injured.
Well, no, during the preseason, there'll be flags everywhere.
Yeah.
Either the players learn or the NFL kind of loosen the strings a little bit, and it's not nearly as prevalent during the regular season. Maybe this is kind of a first step towards something else.
You trust the NFL to do that?
No, I don't. I'm hoping, as I said, I'm hoping it's kind of like this.
But to Wallach's point, like, it'll be interesting. We shouldn't overreact, and I probably will once we get to the preseason, so I'll remind
myself.
There'll
be flags everywhere during the preseason.
But we probably shouldn't overreact to how it's officiated in the preseason. What will matter is how they officiate it week one.
Just leaves more ambiguity, and that's the thing that the NFL right now, I mean, the lack of any kind of black and white or one way or the other, you know what that means? More replay, which means boring games. It means ones that drag out, and everything has to be officiated. I can't figure out why they can't get out of their own way. And that the catch rule thing, I understand that there were a lot of people pissed off because, listen, there were major problems with the catch rule as it stood. The bobbling of the ball I thought was ridiculous. I liked the surviving the ground part of it. It's not a catch if it hits the ground. Then you're sorry, you didn't have it. I liked the whole fact that, you know, you had to get underneath it. Now there's too much gray area. And as you said yesterday, they all but admitted this is going to take more time to review. And that's the last thing anyone wants.
Yeah.
You want bang, bang plays. You want to get excited after a play is done. And God knows you don't want any more Tony Romo. Because that's what you're going to get. All right.